Hi, it's Terry from No Crumbs Left, and I'm sitting across from my longtime friend, Dennis Ryan, one of my favorite ad men. That's what I want to say.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that.
So fun. We've been friends. We've known each other, since Patrick, who's 26, was a baby, so a long time.
A very long time. Very long time.
I want to talk a little bit about the ad business. You know, where did you start with it? Where has it taken us? How is it, you know, included folks like me, and I would love to talk about that.
Sure. What's interesting, when we met, I was working in a very big multinational agency in downtown Chicago making television ads. And Chicago is a great town for making television ads. 30 seconds, a lot of consumer packaged goods, and, you know, ABC, NBC, CBS, we were on the airwaves a lot. And it was a very simple thing. The whole point was to reach a ton of people. If you do a ad, you had to keep it general, make sure you offended no one, and you'd reach 30 or 40 million people, and it was great. You could buy an audience. And over time, that changed. And when the internet came out, and suddenly what Chris Anderson of Wired called the long tail, where instead of reaching a mass audience, you get a very engaged, smaller audience, that's really what we've moved to. And frankly, it's one of the reasons why I've been so fascinated by watching what you've done with No Crumbs Left, because you've created your own network, you've created your own content, and you don't need a major network to do it. And that's really what I love to think about, is like the democratization of creativity and production. I mean, we're here in this really terrific studio, but back in the day, these studios were $2 million and very, very fancy and cost prohibitive, and now we can do it working off an MacBook Pro and a couple of USB mics, if that's what it comes down to, although these are very, very nice.
Yes,
this
these are nice
mics.
This is a
great setup, by the way.
Yes.
Far better than I'm used to. But again, just watching the ability to get creative ideas out there and speak very specifically. I mean, when Maureen and I, my wife and I, went to the No Crumbs Left event at the MCA, it was just so much fun because you saw all these people who shared this passion for this, not just this way of cooking, not just this kind of diet and way of preparing food, but the energy of the food and the way you talk about your mom and the way you don't really give recipes. You tell stories through the whole thing. And it was just really fun. We thought, oh, we'll go get our book signed at the end. Well, right. That line, I think, was halfway down Michigan Avenue. And it was – but that, it's that kind of joy you don't have. You create a platform and draw people to you. And it's, I think, the biggest change, particularly in advertising, and this works for major advertisers as well. You used to be able to buy an audience. Well, I think today the rarest commodity is attention. It's very hard to get someone's attention. We're the most distracted society in human history. And so you have to earn an audience. And that's what you've done. And that's what, frankly, successful brands still do.
Right.
They find a way to engage and earn an audience.
Yeah, absolutely. Like when you started, where was it at? And then talk about, you know, ushering digital and how we've gotten to where we are now.
Well, I think it all comes down to, I don't know if you remember, when I was, when we were making a lot of Budweiser and Frito-Lay ads at DDB in Chicago, and it was great fun. It was such joy. We made these Clydesdales playing football, and for 2 weeks we're in Stanley, Idaho with a crew of 90 people with a town with a population of 70. We're literally in cabins camping out and filming Clydesdales. And it was great fun, and it was a couple million dollars. Just last week, we were creating a digital photo library for this interesting social media safety company. They do a lot of – they check people, you know, big brands, and they make sure they're not getting harmful social content, and they flag it very quickly. We were making a library of footage for them of imagery, and the photographer – was our designer, a guy named Kevin Sparrow in Milwaukee, who's ridiculously talented. And so he said, yeah, I can shoot these. And I was a little bit nervous because I'm like, I guess. And so we went out Monday night, and Kevin's walking around with his cameras, and none of them are very fancy looking. And he's taking these shots, and I think maybe this will work. Tuesday morning, I wake up, I see what he's done, and they're amazing. They literally, as he described it, he said, wow, it's almost like we got an art commission to go out and just capture this movement and motion of the city in black and white. And the photography was fantastic. My favorite thing is he was standing on a junction box outside of Union Station, and we're catching the morning commuters coming out and crossing the Monroe Street Bridge. And he's standing there. He's shooting. He climbed up. He's standing 5 feet up, And the producer and I are basically keeping our eyes peeled for cops, you know, just like, oh, what if we get busted? But that's what we did. And it was, again, it's suddenly production was in our hands. And, you know, I love working with talented people. The advertising and creativity is a great job because you meet so many amazing people. Wow. You're a terrific audio engineer. This person, she's a great editor. This person's a wonderful photographer. And to work with people who are great like that is inspiring, you know. And so it was just – it's just been really fun. I think we've got so many tools at our disposal now that we never had. And, you know, I see what kids can do with, you know, high schoolers are making short films that are tremendous, you know, and are very personal to them. And to me, that's the – there is a – basically, especially now, there's a lid for every pot. You don't have to be creating a TV sitcom that feels like every other TV sitcom since the beginning of time. You can create something very specific to you and find an audience. And I think that's, to me, this idea of earning audiences is, that's probably the most profound change I've seen.
Yeah. And what do you think someone does to earn an audience? I mean, of course, I have my own experience with that.
Right.
But what, when you're talking to brands, how do you advise them to do that? How do you help them to do that? And is that part of what you do?
Well, it is part of what I do. But what's interesting is what you do naturally. You are who you are. You're not putting on airs. You're not trying to be something because, oh, this will get me more people.
Right.
Your authenticity is what draws people to you. And your energy is amazing, you know. It just, but you get excited about something and you share it with people. You're worried about this. You mention that. But, boy, you've got this great idea and you share it and you interact and you talk about the people who have reached out to you. That's a very difficult thing for companies to do.
Right.
If I'm a corporation, my whole history has been about controlling, not sharing. The internet is about, I'm going to give you this. I'm going to tell you exactly what I did. And that might inspire you. And what's interesting, I follow a bunch of interior designers, interior decorators on Instagram, which is still the happy social medium. There isn't a whole lot of contention on that, so I love it. But when you follow them, they will tell you, we use this Benjamin Moore color, and we went to here for these drapes, and we bought this piece of furniture. They will tell you exactly what they do, and they still get hired and are still busy because they share.
Right.
And they create this thing. That's very difficult for companies that grew up thinking, this is intellectual property. We've got to protect it. We can't do this. And I think that's a real struggle to be authentic, particularly now when there are no secrets anymore. I mean, things will get out. And if you are having these issues, people will find out and they'll spread it.
Right.
Very quickly.
So it's just like, yeah, and it's a whole new day how that kind of things happen. And sometimes people can spread things that aren't even true.
That's, well, it's interesting.
The whole narrative can just be a lie.
That's really it. I mean, you've seen that happen again and again. And it's only going to get worse because the ability, you've seen those things where they can manipulate video and make you say things that aren't, that you never said, and change your voice and do that. We are entering a very scary time, and I think that part's the danger of this kind of connection and this kind of access. But at the same point, the ability to get people excited about common ground, I think we just have to. The problem is we're always trying to sell things. The people with the most money to drive that are trying to sell things, whether it's an agenda or clicks or whatever. You know, you don't get followers by being middle of the road and being inoffensive.
Right.
And unfortunately, you know, if you're middle of the road, you're stuck in traffic,
you
I think, you know. So you get a little to the outside. But, you know, unfortunately, on the outside, there's some very bad players out there. And there's some of our lesser qualities get played to. And so that's the danger. And I think that's the hard thing for big companies. How do I find an audience when I don't want to offend anybody and I don't stand for extremism on one side or the other? And that's why I think you're seeing this rise of consumer, you know, basically corporate social responsibility. There isn't a single client we're working with now who isn't investing and very, very conscious of their supply chain, what they're doing environmentally, how they're treating their employees. That awareness is going through the roof, and I think that's overall a very good thing. In fact, even Wall Street won't invest unless they see that you really are committed to the right kind of corporate pose and stance.
And I know you're a little bit involved with, you know, speaking out for women in advertising, and I might be using the wrong word. So tell me a little bit about that.
No, well, it's funny. There are these wonderful women, Carolyn Detman, Erin Gallagher. They started this thing, Have Her Back. It actually came through Golin. And they've been doing these things. That, a couple of years ago, a friend of mine, Lisa Leone, wrote this amazing article on Medium about Ad Girl Interrupted. And if you get a chance to read it, it's, well, it's kind of horrible, actually. I grew up in advertising. My early bosses were all women, and I didn't see the things she's talking about. And so I felt kind of silly for not having noticed. I'm an advertising leader. I should notice these things. And so I called her up, and she's a friend of mine's wife, gotten to know her, and she was telling me just the kind of garbage she had to deal with. And it was breathtaking. So I got this call, would I speak on a panel? And I said, sure. And then Carolyn, who started this panel, called me up. She goes, I just want to tell you, you're going to be the only guy, and you're going to be the only white guy. I'm like, it's fine. And, you know, they were tremendous. It was an important panel, and they've, you know, this Have Her Back movement has been across the country now. And I think it's just, again, part of this awareness, and that transparency does kind of drive. If you're going to be taking advantage of people or putting people down or using unfair influence, it's going to be outed. And I think overall that's a very good thing. Of course, there are going to be problems here and there with it, but most of it's the problem of power shifting, and that's a really interesting thing. And I think that's why this is such an interesting time.
And what? Tell me more about the power shift.
I think the shift really gets down to the empowerment of the individual. There is so much transparency, and that really affects how corporations behave, but also how all organizations behave. We can actually organize without an organization anymore, you know, whether it's the hashtag movements or things like that. But you can drive change based on, well, a bunch of us are like-minded and we're creating this sense. I mean, General Mills recently got rid of all high fructose corn syrup from all their products. And that was based on nothing more than basically a hue and cry from their audience. You know, people are sitting there going, I really don't want this. So that cost them a lot of money, and they had to figure out totally different supply chain issues. But that's actually quite interesting, that the power of people with this common interest. So it's kind of why, now the downside of that is we can be very separated. We can all get caught up in our own thing. And, you know, there was a tremendous book 20 years ago called Bowling Alone, and how we don't have bowling leagues anymore. I saw something just this morning about how participation in Little League is at its lowest it's been. It was a high mark around 2000. It's been dropping ever since. I think it's down from 47% to 38%. And Little League is a good thing. You learn team sports. You learn to rely on each other. And I've got this role and you've got this role and we want to play together. And it's kind of like, you know, it's, I think you learn so many great social skills from it. I was a terrible athlete, horrible, but I love being part of a team.
But everyone probably saw you and that you're very tall, you're great.
Oh, No, I'm very tall now. I was always a very wee fellow with really big feet.
Was it like senior year of high school,
yeah,
you grew 6 inches?
Yeah, I grew 2 years. Yeah.
Yeah, freshman year. I always remember this, that you grew 6 inches.
Yeah, I was 5'5" my senior year in high school, and I grew 6 inches a year for 2 years. You could hear my knees creaking at night. It was a horrible thing, and you can imagine my grace and skill and speed, but you're part of a team and you got to play together, you know. And that's why I always ran cross country. They didn't cut anyone, and so it was really, and that was really good. But what was an interesting thing I saw this morning talking about this decline in youth participation, but there's also this incredible growth of youth sports camps, and this, I mean, it's a billions and billions of dollar industry, and yet at the same point, just simple play has kind of gone away. And I think the idea of working in a collective, we, you know, when you said you want to come here and talk a podcast, well, that'd be fun. That sounds great.
Right.
What a wonderful thing. My friend Bob Merlotti's out in Los Angeles. He's an old writer friend of mine, did some brilliant ads. He created I'm Loving It for McDonald's. So there you go. That's Bob. So Bob, he's been working out and getting into the entertainment business in Los Angeles, and he started this podcast called The Fallout Lounge, and it's sketch comedy. And you know, sketch comedy is expensive. You need a mixer, you need special effects, you need music and all these other things. Well, one of our old friends who used to do recording for us on Budweiser radio ads back in the day, yeah, he's kind of retired. He just likes doing it. So Dave Grabosi does all the mixes. And a wonderful Chicago stand-up improv legend, Dave Pasquazi, yeah, he plays parts just because he thinks it's fun. And people can, and I record parts in my closet with a USB snowball mic in my laptop, and then I send the little files out to Bob, which is, I mean, you talk about putting on a show in a barn, but you're connecting with people. And that's where I think if we, as a society, I'd love to see us have a resurgence of things like where we all work together. And that's where things like the Peace Corps, starting a new WPA would be great. We talk about the division that Russia and social media kind of extremists are causing. And there's no doubt it's a very real thing. It's not a joke. It's right. It's a serious threat. So what are we doing to counterbalance it? How do we work together on something as crazy expensive as, you know, something like Mars, a mission to Mars would be? I just watched Apollo 11, and it's hard not to watch it and just think, wow. I mean, it was nothing but NASA documentary footage. There was not a sound or an image in that that wasn't something that the government took. So you're thinking back then in the Apollo program, not only do we have engineers and flight directors and all these things, we had artists sketching it, recording it, filming it. And there's just something wonderful about the world coming together, and certainly the United States coming together, to say, can we do this crazy thing? And it is a lot of money. There are so many things that need funding. But maybe we could start I think so many people go to college before they're ready. And wouldn't it be
Absolutely.
Great if we
right.
could, you know, harness that youth energy? And how great would it be to be part of a working force that does, you know, fixes roads? And you know, I saw this wonderful thing. This is a wonderful thing about the internet. You can go down so many paths. Some place in Holland where they're paying college students to live in retirement homes so that the
right.
so that they're together and so that, you know, the everyone wins. And I think those kind of simple things, if we can focus, it's great, the power of the individual, but I think we've gone a little crazy on that. And I think we'd all enjoy being part of a bigger team, because there's nothing better than a shared success. And so
absolutely
that's,
you know the art of collaborating, the joy of collaborating, all that it brings, you know. So, and so many people are working freelance in different ways,
exactly,
you know, just where it's like, I mean, Lucy's in LA and she's, you know, auditioning all the time, and then she's working for something cart, what's it called, some kind of cart where you go when you get your groceries.
Oh, really?
The groceries for you. She
yeah.
works for an app. You know, and people are working so differently,
right.
and so collaborative. I mean, you no longer have to work at the office a lot of times. People are working from home. I have people who work for me that could be across the country.
And I think that's really – and that's something else that's the upside of technology. It's
yes.
empowered
yes.
that, and we are connected. I think – you know, what was it, the Dunbar number? You can only ever know 250 people. Well,
right.
you've kind of shot that theory to
yes.
blue blazes. You know, it's just – I think the ability to connect and the ability to tap into individual strengths – we've been saying this to the agency for a while. The future is collaborative. There is no
right.
question. We were working with a woman who was doing this startup, and she wants to do kind of a thought almost like Tom's does with shoes. She wants to do that with meal replacement bars, create this high-end, great product, then also make sure it gets distributed. You know, you buy one and they distribute one to maybe a kid with food insecurity. How do you do that in the right way? How do you do it in a way that everybody wants it? It doesn't feel like a handout. You know, what can you do? And we were meeting with like three or four other people from different disciplines. You're like, wow, I didn't know that much about distribution, or I didn't know that much about manufacturing. And it's really interesting when you can collaborate with people with different expertise. People like to think that, oh, is diversity just is that a passing thing? Diversity is the key to great creativity and great product and great experience. I mean, having multiple perspectives, it's not always easy. But when you do it and you really engage it, the outcome is so much richer.
One of the things I remember about you is I produced a workshop in Hawaii that you attended.
Oh,
because before
greatest.
I did this, you knew me as
of
producing
course.
Events and workshops and classes.
Yep.
And we did that great event in Hawaii. And I remember a couple things. I mean, you met my parents, which I love.
The
you know,
greatest,
because
yep.
anybody who knew my parents.
Mm-hmm.
One of the greatest things about my life right now is in this pottery line I have, and you may have noticed, I've created products that are like Fred products and Patty products.
Oh.
So we have a Fred bowl and we have a Patty bowl. And what's really nice on a daily basis is I can say, we're going to shoot that in the Fred bowl.
Oh,
this is the Patty bowl.
See, that's...
I have a contest where we're giving away a Fred bowl, and people get on and they're like, they'll say, I want the Fred bowl or I want the Patty bowl. And
now
it's...
you think about that. And think about if you were a corporation. Well, that's a little too personal. Think how many people are being reached and know Fred and Patty through the pottery. I mean, it's really... And they have this experience. It's kind of like the little roosters you put through your cookbook. And
yes.
it becomes
yes.
this wonderful kind of thing. And I remember Maureen saying, because we've got this little rooster timer, and she took a picture of it because she and Grace, my daughter, they cook sometimes. They put stuff on Instagram. And it's just fun. They just a great thing we all do together. And that was in one of them. I realized it's right when your book was coming out. The timing was just so serendipitous and interesting. And you keep these personal things alive. There's a very good friend of mine named Odie Ramin. And Odie's family, and he now runs Coop's Mustard and he's up there in Pleasant Prairie, Wisconsin. At the bottom of every plastic thing of Coop's, there's a little OSH in a in an oval. OSH, what's that mean? Odie says, hey. Since he was in college, he'd always like, hey. Odie just says, hey. And so they put that at the bottom of the bottles. There's no reason for it, but it's delightful, and it's personal. And I think the what's odd is I think you get a bigger audience by being more personal, by being more accessible and human and more like me. I love the I love moments of delight. To me, that's the best part.
And for me, it's just like, you know, my mom gone 20 years, but it's like she's with me all the time. And, and you know, originally we developed the Patty Boat was really something for myself, you know, that I loved. And then when I was on the tour, there were people that helped. And as a thank you, I gave, you know, some patty bowls out. And then we developed this other bowl. It was like, well, this is a much more practical sort of operation bowl. And it was like, well, this is Fred right here. So, you know, we have the Fred bowl. And it's just like I said to Rory the other day, it gives me so much joy because I'm saying the word Fred and Patty every day in reference to the bowls. And we're going to eat this out of the Fred bowl. And but those things that make me happy.
Years ago, we tried to sell a Bud Light commercial and the client didn't buy it. But basically what happens, my friend Dave Murhar had gone on a fishing trip with his dad and his brother. And it was an amazing night, amazing weekend. And he just, you know, he wanted to tell his dad he loved him. And he just couldn't do it. He just couldn't. It was just awkward. No guy wanted to hear it. It was just awkward. So he made a commercial about it. The I Love You Man ad. It's like, Dad, yes, son. Well, you're my dad and I love you, man. You're not getting my Bud Light, Johnny. So it was a big joke. It allowed you to laugh at the end. But that ad struck such a chord. It struck an amazing chord. And what was interesting was when we first brought it to the client, because we shot it over a weekend with this wonderful director named Steve Chase, and you know, they off the books, we could do it. We snuck it in. We showed them the cut. They said, well, you can't show that. The guys aren't shaving. They look like they're day drinking. This is terrible. It's like, it's fine. It's a fishing trip. You don't shave. It's okay.
That's what you do. You know? It's day drinking.
But what was interesting is then they put it in front of guys, and so many guys could relate to it because it is difficult to say I love you to another man in a way that you don't want to be, but you feel it, and this is powerful. And I think when you feel things, that's I think the most powerful selling things actually are based on emotion. We get so caught up in data and practicality that we forget how many of our decisions are emotional, you know, and who we choose to love, how we choose, you know, I mean, my God, going to war isn't always the most logical thing. And yet these are big decisions based on emotion. And so I think the idea that, you know, the Fred and Patty, that's just so wonderful because it's true to you and it's true to everybody else too.
Right.
That's neat. Right. That's really neat.
So tell me some of your ads that you, like those that you've worked on that you, when you think back, you just loved being a part of or, you know, anything around that.
Oh, you know what? Most of them are a long time ago because that was when we were doing the really big things. Now, again, they're more personal, so they don't have quite as broad an appeal. You know, we did some wonderful applications and digital experiences for Target, you know, on Missoni when they came out with this designers, they had the bike and things like that. That was great, great work. But, you know, back in the day, we'd have the Clydesdales playing football. We'd have I Love You, Man. We'd have the Yes, I Am guy. You know, those kind of things. We'd have Jason Alexander jumping out of planes in the Super Bowl. And what was interesting is there everything was about the mass audience. If we did it today, well, we'd have taken over his Twitter account and we'd have this little experience online and things. And in a way, you've got more access points, but it's almost become more complicated. And so I think what's interesting is trying to get a big audience anymore really doesn't work as much. But the joy of that was really, I once worked with an editor named Hank Corwin. Hank Corwin, kind of he was doing really interesting things. And we were out, we were working on a series of Bud Dry ads. And we were in Los Angeles. And he pulled out this 3/4-inch tape, it's this old videotape. He said, hey, I just cut this together. You want to see this? It's like, it's for a film for Oliver. Whatever. He put it in. It was a 10-minute opening for JFK that he had cut for Oliver Stone when he was just starting to get into Hollywood films. And our producer at the time, a guy named Greg Popp, and I so regret we didn't get a copy of it because it was nothing but found footage, and it was unbelievably galvanizing. You could just see what this raw talent was. And in my career, that's been the greatest thing, working with great, whether musical talent or editors or actors or directors, to work with people who can make things come alive. You talk about collaboration. You know, right. It really is a matter of getting the right people together. I look at the photographs in your cookbook. Everyone's got the ability to put this filter on or that filter on and make it look pretty good. But you can see the difference that happens when someone can just take it over the top a little bit.
Right.
And it's that extra something a different eye or a different perspective brings. And I just find that the most exciting thing about going to work every day.
Well, in my case, you know, we were so lucky. Tim Turner, who's an award-winning food photographer, has done it a long time. He's done 80 cookbooks.
Yep.
Our kids went to school together. So
oh, really?
I knew him for years and years and years and years. And when we just started doing No Crumbs Left, and it was really, you know, it was an Instagram account with 44 people, and I'm sharing with my friends what I'm making and all of that. And, you know, we had grown to a certain point, and I ran into him at a certain point. At a certain point, Lucy was like, oh, I want to do – she set me up on a Facebook because you can only, you know, direct message the recipe for heroin chicken so many times. And Lucy started a Facebook for me, and I was like 100% opposed to it. And she shared with friends who shared with friends who shared with friends.
Yep.
And she really got something going. I mean, at that point, we probably had 20,000 followers. Now we have over a half million.
Wow. That is so great.
And I ran into Tim Turner. And we were both, you know, foodies and always at the farmer's market. And so, you know, he was working on some project. He, you know, noticed what I was doing and said, called me and said, I really love what you're doing, but you have no idea how to take a picture.
and he said it with love.
Oh, yeah.
That's good.
Always with an edge. But, yeah, he came over and really worked with us and helped us and championed us and really, really believed in us. So when it came through that we had the book, I said, well, there's only one person that we're going to work with.
Right.
And he, you know, took it on in a larger way than other people would. He's,
right.
You know, and he's a great leader because he's been doing cookbooks a long time. And there was so much that he knew that we didn't know, you know, layout and this and changing. And so we were very, very lucky. Tell me how many different – when I think of you, I think of beer ads. And I'm going to get back to that Hawaii story.
Yeah.
But how many beer clients have you had?
I've had quite a number of them. I grew up with Anheuser-Busch, you know, certainly Budweiser, Bud Light, Bud Dry, Bud Ice, Bud Draft. I mean, we went through a crazy product proliferation period there for a while. And the Michelobes and Michelob Dark and Michelob Light and basically all the new products from Anheuser-Busch for years, back when it was owned by the family. And then I moved to agencies and I took the creative lead job at a place called J. Walter Thompson. And there we got some Miller accounts and Miller Genuine Draft and Foster's and a couple things. And what was interesting about that is my friend Bob and I were sitting there, and we had grown up on Anheuser-Busch. Suddenly, we got Miller Genuine Draft in our hands, and they're paying our bills now. So, yeah, I just remember him opening one up, drinking, goes, you know, Dennis, I never knew. This is so delicious. I never knew. And it was like, look, whoever pays you, that's who I'm loyal to. Although, to this day, I probably still drink Budweiser. But then worked on Coors Light and worked on, you know, when I was at Olson, and we had a couple of the Miller accounts. And so and then most recently I was out with Sterling Rice Group in Boulder, which is a brilliant, wonderful food-based company. My friend Adam Wall runs that, and he got the Craft Brewers Association. So suddenly now every craft brewer is your, you know, it's kind of this kind of trade organization. So, you know, beer is just a ton of fun. I was very lucky to work on it when I did because we had many wonderful memories working on going out on production. It was great fun.
I remember when we were in Hawaii and we were there at the same time. My parents were there. And
right.
So my dad said, why don't you have a little mixer for your yoga retreat? I would like to sponsor the mixer. We're going to get beer. And I remember we got beer or whatever, but I remember you drank one kind of beer because that was your client.
Right. Exactly.
But I was so struck by that kind of loyalty. You know?
Well, you have to. I mean,
you have to.
You have to.
So loyal to your client.
Oh, you
and I was always
be.
Like, Dennis is a really, really loyal guy.
Yeah. Well, you know, you got, if they're kind enough to pay your mortgage and they're kind enough to, by golly, you better do what you can.
It's,
I mean, that's exactly it. And, you know, it's funny because you think about, what are you willing to work on? You know, what can you work on? And, you know, that's whenever you're in any kind of, who you choose to affiliate with. And today, the awareness is so high. I mean, there are, you know, young people will try to get a job and they will say, I can't really work on this.
Right.
And, you know, some people get very offended by that, but it's a lot better than them not telling you and kind of phoning it in or not, you know, resisting. So it's really interesting. It's been fun working with basically the newer generation. You hear a lot of, oh, they're all precious. That kind of thing is so tiresome. What's interesting is you see they're just more thoughtful about everything. You know, we were young, bright, and shiny and did whatever we were told. Well, it's not quite happening quite the same today. And you see a lot more conscious choosing of paths and saying, no, I'm not going to work nights and weekends because I really want to make sure I can still get rock climbing. Well,
right.
There you go.
It's a different. And I also think, though, there is a thing that I notice with young people, sometimes their expectation. I mean, my thing is like, this is a job, too.
Yes, that is.
And you have to realize you may not love your boss.
Right.
You may not. There may be things that, you know, that I feel like this younger generation is also hypersensitive to. It's like, it's a J-O-B,
yes.
And you get paid. And sometimes you just, it's like, you may not be crazy about your sister-in-law. She still may be your sister-in-law.
Right.
You know.
You know, and that is really true. Although it's interesting, the people I've been, there are still people who are very aware of, am I doing the right thing? Am I getting the right place? And am I doing the kind of work I want to do? And those people just, it's a self-drive, you know.
Right.
And if you get the right people. And I don't really think that's generational. I've heard of that. And what's interesting is I get a lot of friends of mine say, hey, will you talk to my daughter, cousin,
yes.
niece or nephew,
yeah,
whatever it is.
I get a lot of that.
You know, and I will
yes.
if they call me.
Yes.
I'm not going to do it if you call me.
Yes.
They have to pick up the phone and call me, and they might have to call me twice or
yeah.
email me twice.
Yeah.
And that's fine because you have to be hungry.
If
that's going to turn you off, you're going to have a short little stint, and then you'll do something else, and that's fine.
Yeah,
but
absolutely.
But I still think this idea – there are a lot of people still trying to work very hard, and it's fun to see just the – what I knew as comedy back in the 80s and 90s and aughts is now there's a different kind of comedy. And you need people who are up on that and keeping up with that and reaching the market correctly. It's fun.
So just want to switch gears for a minute. You've been happily married for a long time.
The truth is,
I don't, you know, I'm very happy in my relationship, 11
yep.
years, not married. But I feel like I don't know a lot of happily married people. I do see some.
Yep.
You are definitely one of those people I see. So what would you say about that?
How
have you made that work?
You're nice to bring that up. Get really, really lucky at a young age. I mean, Maureen and I have been married since 84. And we met in college. And literally, actually, beforehand, I saw her picture in the freshman register. And I went, wow, she's beautiful. And
right.
and it was just one of these weird things. And you know, I think the big thing is everyone changes, and you change a lot. We've been very fortunate that we change in a similar way, you know. And Maureen's patient as all get out, and I work really hard to make sure I keep her laughing. And I think that's really it. I mean, everyone goes through tough things, and people think, oh, it's going to be this perfect. It's not. You know, you get frustrated, you get this, you get that. But I think if you're you know, for us, we've just been really lucky. And I do wake up every morning and I look over at my wife and I go, I'm winning.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
So it's just, you know, I just find her also the most interesting person in the world. I just, you know, I think even when she's frustrated, the things she's saying I think are really interesting. And she's a very curious person. So I think together we both have our own private interests, but we drag the other person with us to that. And I think that's, I have a much richer experience. I didn't discover No Crumbs Left. Maureen did.
Right.
You know, and
it was like by accident.
Totally.
Right?
Totally.
You guys had
exactly.
moved to Minnesota.
Yeah,
we had been
gone, and you know, and Instagram, my gosh, how many people are on there?
Right.
You know, and that's the thing. You got to find your tribes, and when you do, it's the greatest, especially when you got a connection. When she showed it, and because I'd hear her, and I'm like, is that Terry? And it'd be your videos, and that's what she said. So that's when I started following. So again, it's such a give and take. And I think, you know, I think the biggest thing is I just genuinely am lucky. I tell other people you shouldn't get married so young. I mean, you're gonna change so much. I just really. We've been really fortunate, and I'm extremely aware of just how fortunate we are,
yeah,
you know,
both amazing
candidly.
People.
Well,
and, you know, not only is she beautiful on the outside, but the truth is she's really amazing.
Yeah,
she's really beautiful on the inside.
Yeah, no, she's a
She has
really
that
good,
light that really emanates.
That's funny.
And the other thing I want to ask you is this, is that I've always really admired, I know that you're a man of faith.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm a person of faith in a non-traditional way.
Right.
You know, but I think, but can you say anything about that?
Well, you know, that is an interesting question. We were very lucky. The man who was president of Notre Dame for years, Father Ted Hesburgh, who is a civil rights champion. There was a great documentary about him just recently.
Amazing documentary.
Yeah, our friend Pat Creedon and Jerry Barker, they did an amazing job with that, and I thought really captured him. And frankly, my wife's dad, who is Father Ted's younger brother, was concerned about it. Are they going to treat him honorably? Are they, you know, do they have an agenda? And I think they did a magnificent job. Father Ted married us. He baptized our kids. We were fortunate enough he'd come up and have Thanksgiving or Christmas with us and say Mass with us. We'd go after a football game up to his office with a bunch of other people, and he'd say Mass. I've been very lucky in that I've had a great relationship with the Catholic Church myself. At the same time, I see all the problems, you know, and you see right. these things. And I think it's kind of like being a patriot today. It's not by saying blind faith. It's by criticizing what you don't want and what you think is the wrong thing. I think, you know, I know so many wonderful priests, really wonderful people. But back in the day, the Irish in the 7th century had women priests. You know, there's so many things you really want to evolve and to grow, right. you know. And so it is a mixed bag. But I think overall for us and for me specifically, you know, I'm a big fan of the Blessed Mother. Big BVM fan. So, you know, it's just one of those things. It just makes sense to me, the mm-hmm. idea that, you know, this woman's at the center of everything. And so, yeah, I try not to – I don't really talk about it much, you know, which is interesting.
I didn't even know it was okay to ask you.
No, it's
fine.
But it's
something that I have admired about you and Maureen.
No, you're kind.
It's something you're quiet about, but it's something that I know and that I see. And, of course, knowing that you guys were related to Hesburgh or are, even though he's gone. And I saw that – film, which I thought was so unbelievable and really told his story. My dad was such a fan of his,
yep.
and you know, just the difference that he really made.
Well, and I think the thing that Pat really found in that movie, I think he's a tremendous filmmaker, is this notion that, you know, and Jerry Barker, the producer-writer, said, priest is a pontificate, means bridge builder,
mm-hmm.
you know, connecting people. The story of the civil rights thing, and it's so relevant today. Southern segregationalists, Northern, you know, kind of liberals put together to do this civil rights committee. No one expected it to work. In fact, they set it up to fail. And he found a way to bring these people together. And that's the thing that we are so in desperate need of. Hate is a pornography of emotions, and there's so much of it today. And it's so ultimately so empty. It doesn't help anybody. And so I think – and this is the problem with digital, is it's easy to hate. If I'm sitting across from you and you say something stupid, I'm not going to call you a moron to your face. We're going to try to find a way to work through it. And those kind of connections, I think that was the story of the movie. And, you know, certainly I had long heard the story about him marching with Dr. King in the South Side. And, you know, basically it's told by his driver, Marty, who is just such a legend. It's a beautiful thing. It's like, you need me? Okay, I'll show up. Boom. Because this is the right thing to do, and there's no question about it. That's the kind of courage I think many of us are capable of and actually do want to live to. I think we have a very bad echo chamber of some of our baser selves, but that's why the personal connections to me are so important and why it's so much fun. Yeah.
And saying yes to things. I'm
yes.
so thrilled you said yes to this.
Well, there you go.
You know?
And so am I.
And I would love to have Maureen on. I know that she's a quieter person, but I mean, the point is there's three of us in a room. It's fine.
Right.
I just think she's an incredible light, and you know, we need more people like Maureen. Well, and I'd love to have the filmmaker on too.
Actually, if Pat's, you know, he's represented by a company in town, and he's been coming in a couple of times talking to clients. I'll talk to him.
Yeah,
he's a fascinating guy, and he's a Chicago person too. So you know, Chicago people always come back.
Yeah,
you know, they come
we
back.
Do.
You know,
yeah.
It's just a thing.
Wonderful. I'm so delighted. It means so much to me that you came. It was so fun.
Thank you. It's great fun.
Chat and hear your stories. So if people want to find you or the agency or whatever, how do they
do
that?
Sure. Well, I work at a place called Bader Rudder. We're right on Michigan Avenue, across from Wrigley Field. You can reach me. I'm Dennis R, that's Dennis with two N's, R61684, that's the day we got married, @gmail. And that's Dennis R61684 on Instagram. So my Instagram's nothing but whatever kind of hits me during the day. I just put up something dopey every couple days. So, you know, there you go.
Love it. And I love our goal and connection and all of that.
That is
all
fun.
All of that stuff is really, really fun.
Really fun.
So, it's No Crumbs Left. Come over and find me on Instagram, Facebook, or the blog. Have a great day.